It's probably something most folks would rather not be troubled with, the shopping for a new rate. I think that's really the genesis behind the partnership. We don't know when members are out there shopping rates. They're going to the LendingTrees and the Credit Karmas of the world, and all of a sudden they're getting inundated with offers that they didn't ask for.
Welcome to 22 Minutes in Lending, your go-to podcast for insights on all things lending. From lending practices, regulatory updates, how to enhance lending efforts, and more. In each episode, Vince Passione connects with industry leaders to discuss the latest trends and happenings around the lending industry. Let's dive into the latest in lending.
Welcome to 22 Minutes in Lending. I'm your host, Vince Passione, and today we're joined by John Anderson, the Chief Lending Officer of Atlanta Postal Credit Union. John's been in the financial services industry for over 20 years with leadership roles at SunTrust and PNC before stepping into the credit union world. Since joining Atlanta Postal in 2021, he quickly made his mark, moving from AVP of Consumer Lending to Chief Lending Officer in just about a year. Let's see what John's been up to. John, welcome to the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Vince.
Awesome. So, John, why don't you just go over a little bit about the credit union, asset size, membership base, and just some of the speeds and feeds, cost of funds, loan to share ratios.
Yeah. We're headquartered here in Atlanta, Georgia, coming to you live from our brand new headquarters right outside the airport. So apologize if you hear the planes in the background.
Congrats on the new move.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I look forward to showing you around. We're about $2.5 billion in assets. Always had a nationwide footprint, primarily postal. Here, as of late, we did start a secondary brand called Center Park. The PARC is a bit of a play on the word parcel, just a nod to our roots. But that's our community-oriented brand. So we had impeccable timing launching that right in the middle of COVID. But here in the past couple of years, it's really picked up steam. And loan to share, we try to hover in the mid-80s. Historically, we've been a pretty conservative credit union, so we don't like that to get too high. Cost of funds, we've been generous payers to our members, historically. So we still try to be, near the top of the market, not the absolute highest, but always prefer to pay our members before going out and sourcing mm-hmm. other funds.
So John, loan to share ratio today, the credit union industry is roughly about 81%. It's down a little bit as of the Q1 reports. Where are you from a loan to share perspective?
I think we're in the mid 80s. We try to stay right around there. There's such good picking out there. We feel like right now interest rates are steady, but higher than we've seen in quite some time. So any chance to deploy right now, we're taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and cost of funds in the industry seems to have come down a little bit. It seemed to spike closer to 200. Now it looks like it's in that 180 range. You sort of at the same, that industry norm?
Yeah, we've seen that. Our cost of funds, it probably peaked maybe 12 months ago. So this past, the first half of this year, we've definitely seen a relaxing of that, which is nice. Less competitive pressures, more members bringing money back to us. So a welcome sign for sure.
Now, John, you mentioned Center Park. So it's a different brand. What was the focus of creating, what was the objective of creating that separate brand from Atlanta Postal?
Yeah, we got a lot of feedback from our community branches that, if you didn't have an Atlanta address or you weren't part of the Postal Service, that they're just, a hurdle that any credit union faces when you start venturing away from your primary segment. So that was the idea behind Center Park. We quickly learned that having two brands was less than ideal. Printing two of everything, the costs and the confusion, two different websites, the work. So I guess it's been about a year or two now. We decided to co-brand. So we're officially APCU/Center Park now. And have just gone to market that way. It's helped, I think. We still have to do some explaining to members about what those two different brands are, but I think we wanted to give a nod to the community that felt like they may not fit under our former name.
And now what's the long-term strategy though? I mean, you're about 100,000 members, I think, looking at your 5,300 reports, is that right?
Yeah, we're well over that, I believe now. I think going forward, we're actually coming upon our 100th year anniversary this year in November. Yes, thank you. We're planning a big celebration, but I think strategically that'll be a point of discussion. What does it look like going forward? I don't know that dual branding was in the cards or it will mm-hmm. be there forever. So More to come. Stay tuned as we hash that out.
Now, John, what do you see as the distinction between the membership? I mean, what is obviously Atlanta Postal, right? One of the oldest credit unions in Georgia, right? You just said 100 years old, which is pretty amazing. And its roots was in the postal services. Now you create CenterPark. And the question is, do these members look different? Do they actually interact with the brand differently?
They do quite a bit. Yeah, it's, and I just assumed that all credit unions that go to the community face similar challenges, but certainly initial results were not as regular payers, not as reliable, a good bit more fraud. So a little bit different interaction. I think historically we had an older membership base. So community focused, we had to prioritize digital, which, you know, admittedly we were lacking a bit on. So yeah, the branch traffic, I wouldn't say has increased much with the community presence, but certainly digital and just less loyalty to the brand. You know, these are folks that have never heard of us. So I don't think we expected them to perform similar to our longtime loyal postal members, but the disparity has been somewhat eye-opening.
Now, what would you have done differently, John? Do you think you would not have launched the brand?
I think the brand was necessary. You know, it's too much of a risk, I think, to depend on one segment. In the Postal Service has been through its trials and tribulations and threats of cuts, and I don't envy the challenges they're facing internally either. So I think it was necessary. I don't know that we would have done anything different, but it's been a learning experience for sure.
Great. John, let's just switch over to the deposit sides, because we were chatting before we got started about deposits. So obviously the industry went through this big liquidity crunch, right? A lot of credit unions turning around and using a home loan bank, right, to supplement. Where is Atlanta Postal and what has been your strategy? I mean, we talked about your deposit base, right? It's feast or famine on certain days. But how did you get through the liquidity crisis, and where do you find yourself now when you look at that deposit base and your sources of funds?
Yeah, we found ourselves in an unenviable position of being extremely liability sensitive, and you know, just, and it makes sense. You know, our postal members love their CDs, and we love to pay as much as we can on them. So that quick rise in rates really bit us in the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Strategically, we've pivoted to more of a savings money market approach. We try to reward our members there as much as we can, just so we're not locked into paying those high rates for long periods of time. I think by and large, we've probably reduced our CD concentration a little bit, but been able to retain most of the deposits from our members just by having a secondary offering for them.
Yeah. So, John, let's switch to the lending side of things. So we're at the halfway mark. And this is the time that most credit unions start thinking about their strategic planning cycles and scenario planning. So first question, in your strategic planning cycle, how many scenarios do you plan with? I was at a conference and CEO of an $8 billion credit union got up and said that, you know, he has 25 scenarios that he maintains with his board, you know, including a couple for what happens if tax exemption status disappears. So scenario planning at Atlanta Postal, is this, there's a half a dozen? Is it two?
Well, that puts me to shame a bit, Vince. I don't know that we planned for 25. I think we a little overkill just lead to inaction. Mm-hmm. So we look at things, the Postal Service reduction in force, that's always been on our radar. We do a good bit of GSA lending, which, of course, this year, if you've watched the news at all, is terrifying with the speed at which they're canceling those leases. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, we do some typical interest rates up and down, a couple hundred basis points either way. I don't know that we're trying to diversify out a little bit. And that was part of the community brand. So if there were a large reduction in postal force, it wouldn't be such a hit to us.
Mm-hmm. And therefore the change in brand and trying to be more community focused.
Right.
So John, based on that, what's the big lending trends as you think and challenges that you're going to have on the agenda as you start going into planning?
Yeah, I think this year we've been talking quite a bit about the surprise return of deposits to the credit union this year and what that means for lending. We always prioritize our organic lending and never want to turn it off or raise rates to be prohibitive for members requesting loans, but you know, with the rates out there, with an eye on interest income, we feel like we've got to deploy those funds, but we just haven't seen the credit underwriting that we would like in order to open the faucet a little bit more on our organic side. So we've seen a shift to more origination partners, Lynn Key being one, of course, just to help us get different asset classes, get funds deployed at market rates that we just can't find internally.
Now, John, for that particular strategy, and we've talked about this in the past, you're going out, you're working with fintechs. Does it all show up to you as indirect lending? Is that the way you look at it?
Yes and no. I mean, it certainly is. It's got all the hallmarks of indirect lending, but we have experienced a little bit better uptick in cross-selling with these members. I guess it's somewhat of how they enter the channel. We, by and large, we're saving them money by refinancing existing debt. That's kind of their first entry into the credit union. And we've got an outstanding team that reaches out, memorizes them, talks through other options at the credit union, and we try to put our best foot forward. So while it is definitely indirect adjacent, we feel like it's a little bit more rewarding than your typical indirect auto.
Now, John, can you share how you do the onboarding? Because typically in the scenario, so I think ReFiJet's one of your big partners, right? We talked about that. So most of the fintechs don't want to see a disruption in the process. They're using credit unions to fund, but other sources of funding as well. And that memorization process tends to take the same shape and form that it does in the auto, in the indirect lending channel, right? Where a membership form is placed in the package as the F&I officer is going through the closing process in the dealership. Take me through how you disrupt that a bit so that you then can really memorize these folks and introduce different products to them. Is it done digitally? Is it done over the phone? Is it being done through direct mail?
Yeah. I mean, you touched on all the challenges of that. I think we've done a pretty good job with the help of our partners. Yeah, you mentioned ReFiJet. Mark III is another one mm-hmm. that we've begun recently doing unsecured loans with. We have to do it digital. Historically, we've been a mail out a form to sign and send back to us kind of institution, but I don't know that anyone would put up with that, either the borrower or the fintech partner. So absolutely digital, integrated into the workflow. It's just part of the process. You know, not everyone reads everything they're signing as part of that process. So that's why we follow up with a phone call. We certainly don't want members thinking we've opened up a primary share account without their permission. So we do make a point to speak over the phone with every member that comes into the credit union.
John, how much does servicing play into developing the relationship with this indirect loan member? If I can call him that for now.
Yeah, we could call him that. It's crucial to me. Given the preference, we'll always take servicing. There's occasions where that's just not possible. We feel like Lynn Key does a great job servicing on our behalf, so we appreciate you guys for that. But ReFiJet and Mark III both, we service those loans. And, you know, I think that really builds the loyalty. Where you mail your payment, who you call if there's a problem. I think that just kind of helps reinforce our desire to actually become a partner with our borrowers beyond just this first initial interaction.
So let's back up. Let's talk about the auto refi market. I've taken a look at that a few times. There's lots of competitors in the marketplace. They're going after these customers. And it is a product that reminds me of education refinance when we stepped into it with credit unions back in 2011, where consumers aren't really that well aware, they're not very aware that they can actually refinance their auto loan. It's a product that seems to be sold, not bought. When you look at that market, is it a market where you think consumers are really aware that they can actually refinance? How does this loan perform against your indirect auto portfolio today? Does it perform better? Does it perform worse?
Too early to tell. This is a new venture for us. So I will definitely follow up with you on the performance aspect, but yeah, I think it's probably something most folks would rather not be troubled with, the you know, shopping for a new rate. I think that's really the genesis behind the partnership. We don't know when members are out there shopping rates. They're going to the lending trees and the Credit Karmas of the world, and all of a sudden they're getting inundated with offers that they didn't ask for. But if they're appealing enough, they'll take advantage of them, and we'll be none the wiser. So while we would certainly prefer them to come directly to us, we've seen a pretty strong shift lately where members just don't reach out when they've got a need. We would love for them to, and we try to make it a one-stop shop where they feel like they can come here, but we are finding ourselves more and more often buying our members back from aggregator sites that then turn around and sell them to other institutions.
Yeah, member recapture is important, especially in the point of sale world. You're spot on, right? We've talked about this in the past in different episodes of the podcast. And Brian Cass had mentioned this from TrueStage that, you know, point of sale is a real threat to credit unions and also an enormous opportunity. Because as you said, you know, your member is out there. They're being solicited. I mean, we know that in the auto space, right? That's been going on for decades now. But the idea that now consumers will show up at buying furniture, they're getting Invisaligns, they're getting LASIKs, and they're being solicited for financing at the point of sale, and you're not aware of it. And there are ways for us as fintechs, and I'll put myself in that category, to figure out that when I'm interacting with someone at the point of sale, whether they're a member of Atlanta Postal or not, and to remind them that they are and let them know that you have a product or service for them that they can get through this channel. So being at the point of sale, I think, is going to be pretty important because you're sort of reactive at that point, but you have to be, right? Because people don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go banking, right? Not to right. slander credit unions and using that acronym. John, we didn't touch on this at all in the preview, but AI. I don't leave these conversations whatever getting into discussion about what's the impact of artificial intelligence in your credit union. You know, certainly in my business, you know, when I think about originating loans and servicing loans, there's just so many opportunities to automate a lot of the work that we're processing, get rid of manual work. What are you seeing in your credit union as far as the adoption of AI in your back office or perhaps on the credit underwriting side?
Yeah, luckily, early on in my credit union career, coming out of banking, it just so happened, I think, that AI was the talk of the town. And we got the green light from our board to test it out. And it's been great so far for us. We've been automated underwriting for, gosh, 3 or 4 years now. Got a lot of back office stuff, processes and skip a pays and loan modifications that are all AI. I think the latest and greatest, our friends at Clutch are coming out this week. They've got a AI robot that's making collection calls on our behalf. And I was terrified to even mention that to our board. But after hearing this thing talk, I had to remind myself that it's not a human. It is just advancing so rapidly. I don't know that you can escape it, but I don't know why you'd want to. We've had great success. And particularly with the partners we've chosen, been a really good venture for us.
Now, John, is that totally automated or is there a human in the loop? What kind of governors do you have on it?
Yeah, we are actually looking to launch it this week. We've been testing for months and it is amazing. I never, you know, collections is a touchy subject. You know, you don't want that to go poorly. So we put all that forethought into it and this thing's working out payment arrangements and getting promises to pay and then taking that back and notating it in the system. It's really taken a lot of the heavy lift, early delinquency, payment reminder kind of stuff off of our plate. I think we want to back that up with a human where necessary, but really free up our collections team to have those important conversations, not the, you know, hey, you forgot to make your payment this month. So yeah, we've got some governors on it. We're keeping a close eye on it, but I'm excited. It's just, with delinquency being high right now, we don't have the ability to go out and hire a whole new team of collectors. I think it's just a big force multiplier for us to turn the bot on.
And Sean, it integrates into your servicing system today to get a promise to pay. If it's doing a restructure, it'll integrate into that servicing platform.
We've got it right into the core, actually.
Okay.
So yeah, it's integrated and it's got a dashboard where we can monitor it. Who'd you talk to and how did it go? Kind of some sentiment analysis. It's amazing. Nothing that we would ever dream about trying to come up with on our own accord, but these tech companies are just moving at speed of light and we're grateful for it.
This is Ron Draper, CEO of Somerville's Credit Union. So in 2014, we were looking for a turnkey student lending solution, one that was simple and efficient for our members to access. And eventually we chose LendKey because it just integrated seamlessly for quick member mobile access and was easy to remotely review and approve from a loan officer point of view. And I should know because I'm that loan officer. I still recommend LendKey to people whenever I get the chance because after almost a decade, it continues to offer consistent product and service delivery, both to our membership and to our staff.
How does Atlanta Postal, how do you immerse the team into AI? Any sort of best practice that's really worked for you?
Yeah, I think there's just some initial concern that AI is going to replace their jobs. That was a hurdle, and I totally understand it, and it makes sense. But no one wants to do routine, monotonous, repetitive requests all day long. I think our team actually is excited to do away with some of the antiquated processes. We tell our staff, don't continue doing something just because that's the way it's always been done. That's a motto we live by, and so it's really, we get all kinds of suggestions from our team that, hey, this is really tedious. We're mailing a form out to a member to sign this. Is there a better way to do it? So it's kind of promoted that internal drive to fix some of these things. And ever since we've been doing that, we've had no pushback when we finally are able to launch these things that make their job easier and allow them to focus on the member a little bit more. It's kind of been a win all the way around.
Great. Now, we said in the opening, John, so you're 20 some odd years in financial services, right? Started in the credit union system in 2021. So you've been at this a long time. You've seen a couple of cycles. When you think about lessons you learn, what's been the hardest lesson to learn, both pre-credit union and now in the credit union system?
It's such a shift coming from the banking world to the credit union. I think before, my hardest lesson was that you can't help everybody. And I think that kind of got turned on its head when I came to the credit union. So,
right.
Which is a welcome change. And I love every bit of that. But I think it's just, you know, even at the credit union level, you can't do as much as you'd like to. We when I first saw my first couple of FICO scores come through on the approved loans at the credit union, I was taken aback. But they quickly taught me that that's okay to do here. We try to help our members, and you know, if we can't do that, then we're no better than the bank. So I think it's just tempering that with financial soundness. You know, we do have an institution to protect. We can't serve members if we're not here to do it. So kind of making that balance, I guess, is just the biggest challenge.
Awesome. John, last question. So you moved from AVP into Chief Lending Officer pretty quickly. What advice do you have for other folks who are thinking about going through that transition? What should they be asking themselves as they think about that chief lending officer spot?
Yeah, think long and hard. We have a pretty good culture of promotion from within. So what we find is that we've got folks that know our members, know our philosophy, know our culture, but may not have experience in the job they're moving into. Which is cool to me. That's the kind of place I want to work at. That's why I was promoted so quickly, I think. I think it's just important to not try to over-engineer your day. We have VPs that are new into the role saying, are you going to train me on how to do this job? And we have to say, no, you won't need to be trained. The work will find you. You don't have to go looking for it. You won't know what your day looks like until you pick up the phone and open your email, and your day will tell you what's going to happen. So I think it's just having an open mind, being open to that learning. We've got a great staff here that most of them that are in higher level positions have been here 10 plus years. And it's an awesome thing. I would much rather promote from within than try to go external for those kind of roles where possible. And I think we've been rewarded for it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, John, we're going to leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
And to our listeners, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast so you never miss an episode. I'll catch you back here on our next 22 Minutes in Lending. Thanks again, John.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the 22 Minutes in Lending podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You'll find links to any resources mentioned in the show notes. If you're enjoying our show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.